Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, May 22nd, 2020. Section A. A&M Center. Home sales plummet. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. There were more homes on the market at the end of April in Midland County than at any other time since at least 2015, according to Texas A&M Real Estate Center. There were 813 homes on the market at the end of April. That is not only the most since at least 2015, but the first time the inventory topped 800 during that time. This is 3.6 months worth of inventory, which is the most going back to November 2016. One reason for the inventory growth was the lack of sales in April. The A&M Real Estate Center reported there were 159 homes sold, the lowest number for any month since October 2016, when 158 were sold. The economy, which started hobbling earlier in the year because of a downturn in the oil industry, slowed down even more in April with the coronavirus pandemic. The following information shows how much. In March, there were 239 homes sold. That number dropped by 80 in a month, the largest month-over-month decline since at least 2011, according to the A&M Real Estate Center. Also, the total dollar volume on homes purchased dropped by more than $30 million to $54.489 million, again, the largest month-over-month decline. A positive for those who did sell their home was that the economic conditions didn't show much of an impact on the average price of a home sold. The $342,707 average was a decline of at least $2,000 compared to April 2019, and the median price of $312,000 was more than April 2019, and a drop of $3,000 month over month. When it came to average and median prices, the Midland County market still dominated other West Texas markets by more than $100,000. And topped other larger metropolitan counties with the exceptions of the greater Dallas and Austin areas. Ty Anders' lawyer. Town Hall is Pacifying Citizens. By Caitlin Randall. C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Following the announcement of a town hall to discuss the incident involving Ty Anders and the Midland Police Department, Anders' lawyer said in a statement that holding a town hall without addressing the incident would be an exercise of pacifying citizens. A video began circulating online Saturday of 21-year-old Anders lying in the grass as five Midland Police Department officers pointed guns at him. Anders was charged with evading arrest after allegedly running a stop sign and failing to pull over when an officer initiated a traffic stop, according to his arrest affidavit. Anders, through Dallas-based attorney Justin Moore, has disputed the version of events outlined in his affidavit. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton and City Councilman John Norman, at a press conference Wednesday, announced a town hall to discuss the incident. Payton said the city would not be releasing dashboard camera or body camera footage at this time. Moore called for Payton to make that footage public Thursday. My office, on behalf of Ty Anders and his family, believes any decision made by city leadership in Midland that does not include making video footage from officer dash and body cam available for public viewing is a decision made in bad faith and is a flagrant lack of transparency. Any town hall that's hosted by Midland's city government prior to addressing what is portrayed on officer dash and body cam and before a disposition of Ty's felony charge is an exercise of pacifying citizens while avoiding honesty about what happened on May 16th. Moore elaborated on that statement in an email to the Reporter-Telegram, saying a town hall would be fool's gold. It seems a town hall, without making police footage available, would be premature or duplicitous. It would only be a discourse concerning community response to policemen's misconduct, and it doesn't actually address what happened on May 16th. He said the footage has not been made available to him. Peyton and Norman indicated during the press conference that the town hall would be held next week, though they did not yet have a date and location. Moore said he and Anders would not be attending the town hall unless the charge against Anders was dropped and the footage was released. Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodoff said Anders' felony case has been submitted to her office. She said she was legally not permitted to discuss the case. Requests by public for footage of the incident could be made to the county attorney, Nodoff said. However, she said she believed any requests likely would be denied because the case is pending.
Here's an article from the front page of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, May 22nd. Energy. Oil posts longest streak of gains in more than a year, by Olivia Raimonde, Bloomberg. Oil posted its longest streak of gains in more than a year, buoyed by output cuts across the globe that have whittled away a stubborn supply glut. Futures climbed 1.3% in New York. U.S. supply data showed crude inventories fell for a second week after climbing steadily since January, and stockpiles at the storage hub at Cushing, Oklahoma, declined by a record. OPEC and its allies are reducing output, and IHS Market Limited says U.S. oil producers are also curtailing about 1.75 million barrels a day of existing production by early June. There is a lot of narrative out there that the rebalancing is going to come quicker and be more aggressive than we thought, said Bart Melick, head of commodity strategy at Toronto Dominion Bank. Oil's rally this month into the $30 a barrel range raises the possibility that shale producers may slowly start to turn on the taps again after futures plunged into negative territory in April, leading to layoffs across the energy industry, a slowdown in drilling, and deep declines in the number of oil rigs in operation. Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated said U.S. shale will emerge from the current slump as a lower growth and more cash generative industry, while consolidation will concentrate the number of players in the sector. West Texas Intermediate crude for July delivery rose 43 cents to settle at $33.92, the highest level since early March. Brent for July settlement advanced 31 cents to end the session at $36.06 a barrel. While the large decline in stockpiles at Cushing, the delivery point for WTI futures indicates the supply glut is starting to ease. A surprise increase in U.S. gasoline inventories last week reflects underlying demand weakness in the world's largest economy. The economic outlook remains uncertain, with another 2.44 million Americans filing for unemployment last week, Labor Department figures showed.
Open Carry Texas plans rally to teach sheriff a lesson, by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. In a video posted last week, Open Carry Texas Vice President David Ahmad said the group will return to Odessa and teach Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths a lesson following the arrests of some group members for carrying guns outside a West Odessa bar. Six men were arrested earlier this month after openly carrying rifles in a lot adjacent to Big Daddy Zane's. They said they were supporting the owner, who opened against Governor Greg Abbott's executive orders. She was also arrested for violating those orders, as was another employee. Griffiths said in a press conference the day after the arrests that the presence of Open Carry Texas was meant to intimidate law enforcement, and that the men were not there to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now, members of Open Carry Texas are planning to return to Big Daddy Zane's and hold a second rally on June 6th, according to a Facebook event and video posted on YouTube. We're going to Odessa, and we're going to show this son of a beep what the Constitution really means, Ahmad said in the video. We're going to have to stand up to this old boy. The arrests of the six individuals led extensive debate on social media over the validity of the charges against them. The men were charged with carrying weapons where prohibited. Griffiths cited the Texas Alcohol and Beverage Commission code when explaining the charges, given the men were on a property adjacent to the bar. The Texas Penal Code defines a bar's premises as the building where the bar is located and does not include parking lots or nearby properties. Griffiths has said he and his family have received numerous threats since the arrests became national news. In Ahmad's video, he called for viewers to cease threatening Griffiths' family. However, Ahmad appeared to threaten Griffiths in the video. This guy needs a lesson, he said. He needs a big lesson, and we need to go out there and teach him. Ahmad said any rally attendees who break the law will surrender peacefully, but if they believe they haven't broken the law and the sheriff's office attempts to arrest them, he said, we're not going to allow that son of a beep to arrest us. I don't care if he rolls in with the whole 2nd Armored Division. I'm not going to surrender to him, he said. A spokesperson for the Ector County Sheriff's Office said they have seen the video but could not comment on it because it's part of an ongoing investigation. MMH. Nursing home staffs will perform testing. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Midland Memorial Hospital CEO Russell Myers provided additional details on Thursday about the plan hospital officials and the Midland Fire Department have adopted to meet the state mandate that all nursing home residents and staff be tested for the coronavirus. Testing will be carried out by nursing home staff with the supervision of the fire department and hospital, Myers said. He said they believe this will lessen any possible exposures. The nursing homes are the best equipped in every case to handle the testing. They know their staff. They know their patients. They're already working in that environment. Introducing outside folks like EMTs from the fire department or any larger number of folks from our hospital isn't necessarily a positive in any of these environments that are very well controlled and locked down right now. He said hospital staff have provided training to the nursing home employees on collecting samples and the proper use of personal protective equipment and would continue that training throughout the process. There are 6 nursing homes in Midland, Myers said. He said the Midland Medical Lodge would not need to participate in the testing, according to the state's orders, because all staff and employees have been tested within the last 30 days. Additionally, he said any residents who test positive will be isolated in their nursing homes unless their symptoms require hospitalization. Myers said earlier this week that the fire department was waiting on their shipment of testing swabs to arrive before testing could begin. Idea Public Schools to open 4 schools in Odessa in 2021. From staff reports. Idea Public Schools announced Thursday it will be opening 4 new schools in Odessa, Idea Yukon Academy and College Prep, and Idea Zanetta Academy and College Prep. The new campuses will be opening in August 2021 with grades kindergarten through 2nd and 6th grade and will add a new grade every year until it is kindergarten through 12th grade campus. We are excited to enter the Odessa community with the opening of Idea Yukon and Idea Zanetta in August 2021, said Bethany Solis, the executive director at Idea Permian Basin. Idea Public Schools and Midland ISD announced in March 2019 their partnership to serve families of Travis Elementary School starting this August. Idea Travis will serve 800 students in grades pre-K through 6th grade. This year, Idea Public Schools is celebrating 20 years. During this time, Idea Public Schools has grown from a small school with 150 students to the fastest-growing network of tuition-free pre-K through 12th grade public charter schools in the United States, according to the release. Currently, the network serves nearly 53,000 college-bound students in 96 schools across Texas and Louisiana. Ector, Midland County's behind in Texas for number of cases. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. Ector County has 11 more confirmed cases than Midland County, but both counties appear to be behind the norm for a county with their respective populations. The Midland Health Department website reported 123 confirmed cases. Heading into Thursday, Midland County ranked tied for 48th of all the counties in the state in terms of confirmed cases, according to the Department of State Health Services. A Census Bureau estimate in 2018 reported Midland had the 26th largest population of any county in the state. The Midland Health Department also reported Thursday that 43 of the 123 confirmed cases in the county have recovered and 12 have died. Midland Health reported Thursday it has conducted 2,409 tests. The Ector County Health Department website reported 4 more cases on Thursday, bringing the total to 134. Heading into Thursday, DSHS reported 124, the 47th most of any county in the state. Ector County has the 28th largest population of any Texas county. ECHD also reported Thursday there are 3 probable cases, 88 residents who have recovered, 4 deaths, and 2,069 tests taken. Tradewinds Roundabout opens today. From staff reports. The extension of Tradewinds Boulevard between Thomason Drive and Business 20 will open to the public today, according to a press release from the city. This new 4-lane divided highway will serve as an important backage road for Southwest Midland, according to the release, allowing two-way traffic circulation north and south on the west side of Loop 250. Similar to Beale Parkway on the east side of Loop 250, Tradewinds is expected to relieve some traffic currently using the Loop 250 service roads and interchanges and will also open up additional land for further development. This new segment of Tradewinds Boulevard includes bicycle lanes throughout and Midland's first multi-lane roundabout at the intersection with Aneta Drive. Roundabouts, according to the city, are a safe and efficient type of intersection design that can work well for locations with moderate traffic volumes. Drivers are also cautioned that traffic on Thomason Drive coming from Loop 250 will now need to stop at the intersection with the new Tradewinds extension. Traffic traveling north or south on Tradewinds will have the right-of-way. This project was funded through a partnership between the City of Midland and the Midland Development Corp. Both the roadway and drainage infrastructure were built by Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving Contractors of Odessa under a contract valued at $8.026 million. Driving in a roundabout. Slow down as you approach the intersection. Yield to traffic already in the circle. Enter the circle and follow the loop in a counterclockwise direction. Make a right turn to exit the roundabout. The opinion page. Be ready to listen during race discussion. From Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at MRT.com. The vast majority of us don't know what happened when 21-year-old Ty Anders was arrested on Saturday. That is the truth. And a viral video isn't going to change that. That is why Midlanders should side with our mayor and city leaders that, at this moment, the most important thing we can do is to listen to each other. Oh, if our social media-dominated society were someone where someone has to be right, allowed people to listen, we could guarantee that our community would be a better place when all this is over. Here is my guarantee. Over time, we will know all the details of Anders' arrest. There will be more clarity on whether Anders' rights were violated. There will be evidence to show who was in the wrong. This newspaper plans to allow that process to play out. Some people are going to be calling for all videos to be released immediately. My expectation is there will be a time and a place for that. Today isn't that day. Here's why. Mayor Patrick Peyton has provided a real opportunity for our community to do more than see who is right and wrong in the handling of the Ty Anders arrest. He called for people in our community to have a real discussion about communication taking place between residents, their leaders, and the police force. The truth is, Anders' arrest brought us to this point, but it will be the willingness of all involved that will determine if that meeting is as productive as it can and should be. City leaders were correct that people are certainly on the edge right now because of a bad economy and coronavirus, and the last thing Midland needs is a race conflict to get out of control. They were right to ask, who's ready to talk? And more importantly, who's ready to listen? Because if a town hall is a contest of who talks loudest, then we all lose. Now is not the time to exacerbate the fight. Now is not the time for bomb throwing on any side. The previous two sentences will make some people mad. They will ask, what does this guy know? They will say they have been waiting for this time to get something off their chest. I get it. But to those people I ask, what is the outcome that you seek? What exactly do you want? I promise to listen and work for a better outcome. Will you? In this particular case, the area of town in question is District 2, generally regarded as South and East Midland. Over the years, residents of this district have been capably represented by people such as James Bradford, Vicki Haley, and John Love III. People who didn't tolerate anyone taking advantage of their constituents. And now, John Norman is the representative. Midlanders watched Wednesday as Norman made his comments about the arrest and town hall opportunity. Norman was careful about the words he selected. Some people on social media pleaded with him to say what they believed he was thinking. The problem is, we don't know what he was thinking. And even if we did, Norman is not just another person, certainly not someone who can hide behind his keyboard or webcam. Norman is a leader in the community. He knows there has never been a more important time for his words to be right. It might not please the social media masses, but leadership requires being thoughtful, especially during tense times like these. I am pleased to say I have known John Norman since 1995, when he was a junior at Lee High School, and I watched him play football and run track. I am more pleased to see how much Norman has grown as a leader. On Wednesday, he talked about the deep-rooted frustrations of African Americans in Midland and at the need to hold people accountable on all sides, calling for accountability for all involved. That's leadership. That offers this question to anyone wanting to participate in a town hall about race, police relations in Midland. Are you ready to hold yourself accountable?
Hello, this is Michael reading an opinion column from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, May 22nd, 2020. Guest view. Success of reopening depends on people still taking precautions. The next 2 weeks, which include Memorial Day, will be a test of our resolve to gather safely. Governor Greg Abbott is right to widen reopening, but its success depends on Texans' common sense. Most businesses in Texas have the go-ahead to reopen, albeit with restrictions. Families and friends are also sure to gather in larger numbers on Memorial Day, for the first time in weeks. Abbott deserves praise for navigating a difficult course through the medical and economic challenges posed by the coronavirus. Office buildings can reopen if businesses operate with no more than 25% of their workers in the office and practice social distancing protocols. Child care is back, a necessity for working parents, and a dry run for the challenges schools will face. Restaurants will be allowed to increase to 50% capacity. Youth, sports, competitions, and camps can resume by the end of this month, and summer school can begin on June 1st. Although this sounds like a return to normal life, it isn't, at least not yet. There is much more about this return to a more normal existence that we can't predict. The coronavirus is still a threat. We should wear masks, sanitize surfaces, socially distance, and take other precautions to protect each other. And older people with underlying health conditions should be especially careful. Statewide, a declining infection percentage supports the governor's decision to gradually loosen the reins. Challenges will differ from county to county, city to city, and neighborhood to neighborhood. How we deal with those challenges will determine the next steps. Key to this is close cooperation between state and local governments, more diagnostic testing and contact tracing, with special focus on potential hotspots, is required to keep the state ahead of the virus. This is good public health policy and a way to build public confidence in the future. It is important for us to remember that Abbott's orders establish the minimum statewide requirements for reopening the economy. All of us have sacrificed in some way to keep ourselves and our neighbors safe, and it may be quite a while before we can expect to enjoy the Texas we knew in the way we knew it before the coronavirus so dramatically changed our lives. The best way to make sure that our sacrifices haven't been in vain is to do all we can to protect those gains. Dallas Morning News.
Obituaries and death notices. Brandon Kyle Smith, age 42 of Midland, passed away on May 19th. The family will receive friends on Friday, May 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Services will be held Saturday, May 23rd at 2 p.m. at Grimes Funeral Chapel, 728 Jefferson, Kerrville, Texas. The graveside service will be held at Gardens of Memory Cemetery immediately following the service. Brandon Kyle Smith was born February 22, 1978, in Odessa. He is survived by his three children, his brothers, and his sister, as well as four nieces and two nephews. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelsh.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, May 22nd, 2020. Section A. Permian Top 10. 1. Chandler Chestnut, valedictorian. GPA 5.915172. Parents Desiree Cadell and Kane Chestnut will attend Texas A&M. 2. Julissa Garcia, salutatorian. GPA 5.675926. Parents Jesus and Christina Garcia. She will attend Texas Tech. 3. Jennifer Athiala, GPA 5.675424. Parents Chakravarthi Athiala and Sudhaveni Athiala. She will attend UTPB. Number 4. Abigail Gex, GPA 5.570175. Mother Michelle Gex. She will attend UT Austin. 6. Bonnie Forrester, GPA 5.516200. Parents Patricia Forrester and Jody Forrester. She will attend Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Number 7. Haley Douglas, GPA 5.499455. Parents Jennifer and Gary Douglas. She will attend the University of North Texas. Number 8, Isis Corral, GPA 5.491864, parents Guadalupe and Manuel Corral. She will attend UTPB. Number 9, Samantha Delgado Vasquez, GPA 5.46300, parents Befuel Delgado and Naira Vasquez. She will attend UTPB. Number 5, Ashton Marie Aranda, GPA 5.561034, parents Tennille and Fabian Aranda. She will attend Texas Tech. And number 10, Sydney Anglin, GPA 5.456379, parents Susan Anglin and Robert Anglin. She will attend UT Austin.
Hello, this is Michael picking up another front page story from the Odessa American, Friday, May 22nd. Traveling therapist tests positive. Nursing homes testing in Crane, Odessa, and Monahans, by Michael Merlo. A therapist who has worked this week at nursing homes in Odessa and Crane, and possibly in Monahans, is positive for COVID-19. A representative of Focused Care at Odessa Nursing Home confirmed in a phone interview that the traveling therapist was tested at their facility Monday, and that since then, all other employees and residents have tested negative. Rebecca Reed, who provides communication for Focused Care at Odessa, said that all family members of those at the nursing homes have been notified and the therapist was asymptomatic. This is the second case regarding Ector County nursing homes and the same case that was reported during Wednesday's hospital press conference. Thursday afternoon, Reed sent out a press release from Focused Post-Acute Care Partners regarding the May 18th testing in Odessa that revealed the positive therapist. The release detailed that the therapist had also provided services the same day in Crane prior to being tested, and that the therapist was also at the Focused Care at Monahans, where those residents are in quarantine and are showing no symptoms. All residents and employees at the Monahans nursing home are scheduled to be tested Tuesday, and Odessa Fire and Rescue is testing the Crane Nursing Home today. Focused Care has 31 communities throughout Texas, and they are following CDC recommendations and preventative procedures, the release detailed. They have multiple facilities throughout the Permian Basin, including in Crane, Odessa, Midland, and Monahans. Focused Care has now restricted therapists from treating residents in person at more than one facility, aside from virtual care. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said Wednesday that the Ector County Health Department was unaware of where the traveling health care worker was tested or where she had traveled. Odessa Fire Rescue had tested Focused Care in Odessa Monday as part of Governor Greg Abbott's order to test nursing home workers and residents. OFR Assistant Fire Chief Joey White said he wasn't made aware of that positive until Thursday, and he wasn't expecting the tests to come back so fast. Regarding the Crane nursing home that had a resident test positive, the Focused Care release detailed that symptomatic residents were given rapid tests by Crane Memorial Hospital and quarantined for all who came in contact with the therapist, regardless of showing symptoms. Rapid result tests have been difficult to come by for Ector County hospitals, and earlier this week, Abbott Labs reported their rapid tests can produce false negatives. It is unclear if the rapid tests used in Crane were from Abbott Labs. The positive therapist will not be able to enter the Focused facilities until she tests negative twice, in keeping with Focused Care COVID-19 protocols for team members who test positive, the email states. The release detailed that the therapist underwent screening processes before going to facilities but was asymptomatic. The Ector County Health Department sent out a press release Thursday afternoon reporting that they received results on Wednesday from the May 18 focused care at Odessa testing. When ECHD was called Wednesday about the incident, they did not return phone calls. Instead, in a previous phone interview Wednesday afternoon, Hayes said she wasn't aware of the case, and upon calling the health department, added that she and the health department weren't aware of what facilities the therapist was tested at or what facilities the therapist worked at, but that contact tracers were reaching out to the therapist for more information. Hayes didn't return phone calls Thursday by press time. Ector County reported having 19 more COVID-19 positives Thursday than Monday. Ector County reported that there had been 134 positives, 99 pending, while 13 drive-through tests have been positive and one is pending. As of Thursday, 42 cases are active and 88 positives have recovered. The Ector County Coliseum drive-through testing has received 341 calls and has conducted 155 tests. Medical Center Hospital officials also detailed that they had a fifth employee test positive. They are a pharmacy tech, and their last day at work was May 19th.
Driver license appointments. Governor Greg Abbott announced that the Texas Department of Public Safety, DPS, will begin a phased opening of driver license offices starting May 26th with limited service offerings. As part of this opening plan, DPS will launch a statewide driver's license appointment system that allows customers to book appointments up to 6 months in advance. The limited services being offered will be by appointment only. Offices in West Texas will reopen with limited services beginning May 26th. Customers who do not currently possess a Texas driver's license, commercial driver's license, learner permit, or ID card, as well as those who are in need of a drive test, can begin scheduling appointments at these two regions at 1 p.m. Friday, May 22nd. Odessa College opens to serve students. Effective May 26th, the Odessa College campus and extension centers in Andrews, Pecos, and Monahans will be open to serve students. The Children's Center and the Sports Center will remain closed at this time, and external meetings and large gatherings will be postponed until further notice. Most summer courses will be offered in online and remote formats using the college's learning management system. Students are encouraged to contact their instructor to determine if on-campus lab sessions are required, a news release said. We are grateful for this opportunity to open our doors and serve students, President Gregory Williams said. Prioritizing teaching, learning, service, and safety during these uncertain times is critical to our community and our economy. The college will continue taking precautions to minimize the spread and mitigate the unpredictability of the coronavirus. This includes a mandatory health screening for students, employees, visitors, and vendors entering campus. Students reporting to campus must check in at the Salisbury Campus Center for the daily mandatory health screening. All other individuals entering campus should visit http://www.odessa.edu/screening for information regarding screening protocol and additional screening locations. Additionally, protocols have been established to facilitate social distancing and limit loitering while frequently sanitizing campus work, learning, and common spaces. Appointments are preferred for on-campus visits, and face coverings are strongly recommended. A new virtual sign-in platform will allow students to wait in their vehicle for the next available student services specialist, and virtual appointments with student services personnel and faculty are available and encouraged. To schedule a virtual appointment with student services personnel, please email your request to wranglerexpress@odessa.edu, advising@odessa.edu, financialaid@odessa.edu, testing@odessa.edu, or records@odessa.edu. Additional guidelines regarding the virus, prevention, and updates can be found at https://www.odessa.edu/announcements/coronavirusfaq.html. IDEA Public Schools to open 4 schools in Odessa in August 2021. IDEA Public Schools announced the addition of 4 new schools: IDEA Yukon Academy, IDEA Yukon College Prep, IDEA Zenetta Academy, and IDEA Zenetta College Prep. The new campuses will be opening in August 2021 with grades kindergarten through second and sixth grade, and will add a new grade every year until it is a fully scaled kindergarten through 12th grade campus. Each campus has 2 schools, a kindergarten through fifth grade academy and a college prep for sixth through 12th graders, communications manager Jennifer Flores said in an email. We are excited to enter the Odessa community with the opening of IDEA Yukon and IDEA Zenetta in August of 2021, Bethany Solis, executive director of IDEA Permian Basin, said in a news release. We look forward to serving and supporting students, families, and community members in the Permian Basin area. Our top priority is providing a quality education to students that will prepare them for college and life. In March 2019, IDEA Public Schools and Midland ISD announced a partnership to serve families of Travis Elementary School starting in August of this year. IDEA Travis will serve 800 students in grades pre-K through sixth grade. Youth Programs Face Tough Choices by Royal McGregor. David Chancellor, the executive director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, is sandwiched between a rock and a hard place as the organization prepares to reopen its doors at the beginning of June. The Boys and Girls Clubs have been closed since March 15th due to COVID-19. Only 2 of the 3 Boys and Girls Clubs in Odessa will reopen on June 1st, Wilkerson Club, located at 800 East 13th, and Headley Club, located at 1476 North Knox. Chancellor hopes the Woodson Club, located at 10376 East Murphy, can reopen sometime this summer. The Boys and Girls Clubs are going to be limited to 80 children, which Chancellor said is about half of what they normally managed in the past. Everyone at the Boys and Girls Clubs will be required to wear a mask. However, Chancellor said the hardest part about reopening at 50% capacity is the amount of kids he knows the Boys and Girls Clubs will have to turn away. He said the Boys and Girls Clubs will prioritize members whose parents need the facilities so they can go to work. We want to take care of the kids who have been with us for years, and we want to focus on those where our services are deeply needed, not just to get your kids out to go and do something fun, but if you really need us so you can go to work, Chancellor said. We are trying to talk to families. We are limited on who we can serve. That's the hardest decision. We can't serve everyone. The Boys and Girls Clubs in Odessa issued a statement March 15th that after Ector County Independent School District and Midland Independent School District closed, that organization would follow. Chancellor explained the Boys and Girls Clubs in Odessa have experienced bad flu seasons, but he said there will be extra precautions in place with the coronavirus. Chancellor explained that he doesn't want children at the Wilkerson Club or Headley Club to bring the coronavirus home to their parents or grandparents. In addition to a limited number of children and the mask requirement, Chancellor said the Boys and Girls Clubs have also purchased hospital-grade sanitizer that will be used to sanitize rooms. He said the sanitizer cost $1,200. Whenever you have lots of kids together playing, it's an environment for disease to spread. The threat of the coronavirus is those kids taking it home to their parents. We want to run responsibly because people need us. The Boys and Girls Clubs in Odessa aren't the only organization altering its modes of operation. The Odessa Family YMCA reopened Monday at reduced hours, while the Police Athletic League hasn't determined if the nearly 30-year-old program is going to take place this year. According to the Odessa Family YMCA website, members will be asked to complete a waiver, screening questionnaire, and temperature screenings. All must wash or sanitize their hands upon entry and before and after workouts. Members will be restricted to a 90-minute time limit inside the facility, and all members must wear full coverage gloves or masks at all times. During a phone interview with Odessa Police Department spokesperson Corporal Steve Lesser, he explained Thursday afternoon that a decision hasn't been made if PAL will take place this summer. Lesser said it would be unfortunate if PAL wasn't able to continue. A year ago, it had a total of 150 children split into two sessions throughout the summer. This does help build those positive relationships between law enforcement and these kids, Lesser said. It's unfortunate that we can't have it this year due to COVID-19, but at the same time, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Here's another story from the inside pages of the Odessa American. ECISD serves 1 million meals. Ector County ISD School Nutrition Department has served 1 million meals since March 17th, and they will likely keep serving even through July and August. That includes breakfast, lunch, and a super snack. Initially, it was just breakfast and lunch. Like I said, I put on our social media post, to put in perspective, it amounts to providing meals for the entire city of Odessa more than eight times over, Director of School Nutrition Brandon Reyes said. We're very excited, and obviously the work that we have will continue on for as long as we can take it. Letters will be going out the next couple of days to inform the community that we'll be extending our meal service through June 30th, Reyes said. USDA will extend some of its waivers, so they will likely continue into July and August, but the likelihood that sites will be reduced is pretty good. They normally serve through June, which they are mandated to do by the state, since the district has more than 50% of its students on free and reduced lunch. But we may have a little bit more modified meal service because we want to make sure that we give our folks a little bit of a break, but at the same time, work to meet the needs of the community, he said. The peak was March 20th, when almost 30,000 meals were served. The super snack was not included. It started dropping off after that, but by March 31st, they were still serving about 10,000 lunches. On a regular day, school nutrition serves 15,000 breakfasts and 16,000 lunches, Monday through Friday. School nutrition has 260 on staff and about 150 to 160 people working. Odessa High School alone has 16 people. But you can only have four people there to abide by social distancing rules in the kitchen. Two school nutrition workers, one at Gonzales Elementary School and one at Permian High School, tested positive for COVID-19, and entire teams at both campuses were replaced so the previous teams could quarantine. Since the initial panic of the pandemic, Reyes said the numbers have dropped off, but he said a lot of factors went into that. When this first kicked off, there was a ton of uncertainty. There was a ton of panic. There was a ton of just people not knowing what was coming next. So that played into a lot. You're hearing of food shortages, toilet paper running out. Everybody was like, hey, this is it. So everybody was rushing to the stores. The stores weren't letting people in. You had to wait in line. So food was really hard to get. So a lot of people utilized us as an additional resource, Reyes said. As time has gone on, things have opened up, and there has been more food availability, so there's less panic. But we're still serving about 3,900 children per day, so that's definitely enough to keep going. Our area got the double impact of the coronavirus and the oil field. The good thing is the meals are there for everybody, Reyes said. Meals are available to youngsters 18 and younger, regardless of whether they attend ECISD schools. We're very excited. Our team's been out there. It's been super hot. They've been wearing masks. We've implemented work-rest cycles, Reyes said. He said he's told team members to take as many breaks as they need to during the day, even to just sit in their car with the air conditioning going. That way you can remove your mask. You're in your own little environment. You can just take that much needed break. We're trying to do everything that we can for them, both to protect them from the virus and also to protect their health and well-being, Reyes said. We wouldn't want someone to get heat exhaustion during meal service or have anything bad happen to them. There's no limit to what we're doing to try to make sure that they have what they need and they have the time to do what they need to do, he added. Reyes added that he's been truly inspired by his staff. When the pandemic started, he said nearly 80% of them stepped up to help. I was extremely inspired by our team because they're so selfless. They really love the kids. They love the community, so they're very dedicated. This was a testament to that. Like I said, I've been very, very impressed, and I'm going to do everything I can to continue to make sure that they're taken care of one way or another. ECISD spokesman Mike Atkins said school nutrition's efforts are remarkable. The work that Brandon and his team did and have continued to do over the last 10 weeks is pretty amazing when you consider how many rules and restrictions have been put on just to serve meals, Atkins said. He added that they have been constantly adjusting the process and management of it, and to still have 1 million meals served in that amount of time speaks to the level of commitment and being determined to provide meals for the students. We applaud their effort, Atkins said.
Teens charged with firing handguns in Northwest Odessa. Three teenagers were arrested after they reportedly fired handguns in Northwest Odessa and posted the incident on social media. Damian Villarreal, 17, was charged with manufacturing or delivering a controlled substance more than 28 grams and less than 200 grams, a second-degree felony, deadly conduct, discharging a firearm, a third-degree felony, possession of tetrahydrocannabinol, a state jail felony, possession of marijuana, a state jail felony, and unlawful carrying a weapon, a Class A misdemeanor. Luis Marquez, 18, was charged with deadly conduct, discharge a firearm, a third degree felony, theft of a firearm, a state jail felony, and unlawful carrying a weapon, a Class A misdemeanor. Alexis Tarazas, 19, was charged with deadly conduct, discharge firearm, a third degree felony, theft of a firearm, a state jail felony, and unlawful carrying a weapon, a Class A misdemeanor. The reported shots fired happened around 3:05 p.m. May 15th in the 4800 block of North Golder, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. The caller stated there were 10 to 20 shots fired in the area. Villarreal was reportedly seen on Snapchat recording a video which showed the 4800 block of North Golder. The video also showed Marquez and Tarazas. They were in a public roadway traveling in a gray 2006 Audi passenger car. Villarreal Marquez and Terrazas were seen on a Snapchat video, which was posted on Villarreal's public story, discharging two black handguns toward a residence in the 4800 block of North Golder, the affidavit detailed. Officers reportedly responded to the shooting and found the Audi in the 300 block of West 46th, and a traffic stop was conducted. Villarreal, Marquez, and Terrazas didn't possess a valid or current state of Texas license to carry handgun permit. There was also a strong odor of marijuana coming from the vehicle, and a search of the vehicle was conducted. Officers found two 9mm semi-automatic handgun shell casings in the trunk. Officers also found a 9mm Luger shell casing matching the casing in the vehicle. Shell casings matching the ones located in the vehicle and in the residence were also located in the 4800 block of North Golder. At 6:20 p.m. May 15th, a search warrant was reportedly issued for the residence in the 300 block of West 46th, and it resulted in both firearms in the video on Snapchat. Firearms were a black Glock 17 9mm and a black Springfield XD357. Officers also found 127.7 grams of Xanax, 6.15 ounces of marijuana, and less than a gram of tetrahydrocannabinol in a THC vape pen, the affidavit stated. All narcotics and the Glock were reportedly found in a brown backpack in Villarreal's bedroom. Prior to the search warrant, Villarreal was advised of the rights afforded to him per the Miranda decision. Villarreal advised he understood his rights and waived them, stating he would answer questions with detectives. Villarreal stated the Xanax, marijuana, and Glock were his, and he participated in the shooting in the Audi. He stated he sells Xanax and marijuana for a profit. Investigation reportedly showed the black Springfield was stolen out of Midland. Villarreal, Marquez, and Terrazas were arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Villarreal had five bonds totaling $71,500 and posted bail Monday, jail records show. Marquez and Terrazas each had three bonds totaling $34,000 and posted bail Sunday.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.